Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Royal Blue Podcast. I'm your host, Ian Kroll, and today I'm joined by The Echo's Everton FC reporter, Chris Beasley. Chris, how are things?
Okay, well, just gearing up for what he says on our title there, a must-win match. It's always been a must-win match, hasn't it? And even more so as we go into that one.
Yeah, absolutely. We're definitely going to get into the thick of things and go deep diving into Everton v Burnley. Also on the pod today, making it a long-awaited appearance, super sub, drafting them in because we are short on numbers, is Echo, the Echo reporter, big Everton fan, Dan Haygarth. Dan, how are things?
Not too bad, Ian, yeah. All good. Friday, so you know.
It is a Friday, which is always a good thing.
Yeah, but yeah, all good. A bit nervous about tomorrow, but...
Well, the nerves will be...
You say Friday's always a good thing, but not if you go to Luton Town, maybe, as we've seen from the fixture changes today, yeah. Friday night trip to Kenilworth Road for the Blues, so that's a nice one for the fans, isn't it?
Yeah, which is obviously the away one, isn't it, anyway? Yeah. So, obviously impacted by sky changes Friday night, but yeah, well, you know, we can come on to that, Chris, but... Yeah. You'd like to think that we'd have enough points on the board by then, maybe to say that we'd already be safe.
Yeah, let's hope so.
Okay. Well, I must confess that I've made a monumental error today, lads. I haven't had my dinner before this pod recording, and I'm absolutely starving.
Yeah.
So I don't know about yous. What did yous have for your dinner?
I'm halfway through a sandwich. Yeah.
Halfway through?
Yeah. Still on my desk over there. So.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, what about you, Chris? Any sandwiches?
I had the wrap from Tesco other supermarkets are available. Yeah, I always try and make sure that's why I don't like if we do a bit of an early one. I don't like to have my stomach rumbling in the background.
No, absolutely. Unfortunately, that's going to be the case.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's move on. We are live on YouTube, so please, those watching, give us a like, give us a subscribe, leave a comment, click the bell. Also follow us on TikTok. Royal Blue Podcast is now on TikTok. Plenty of decent reels and clips from all of these pods that we do each week. TikTok, obviously, get on it, give us a follow. And like I say, we are live. So submit your questions and I'll put them to Dan and to Chris. And we'll see if they can answer some of them. So the agenda today, we're going to talk pre-Burnley show. As Chris mentioned, it is a must-win game. I think there's no danger of that, lads. We're also going to talk about the Everton fans' rallying cry and how Everton fan group, the 1878s, have organised a few things before the kickoff, and hopefully that'll give the players a boost. And I'm going to literally just touch on the latest on 777. Because not really an update, but Chris, I will come to you on this, and I know we just talked a little bit about 777 before we came on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to ask you what this means or your understanding of it, but you know, the longer this goes on, and you know, I'm going to read a piece from basically our business of football writer Dave Powell.
Mm-hmm.
The headline has said 777 partners have been handed a new blow, this time by US regulators. So the line, or the first initial paragraph from that piece, says potential new Everton owners 777 partners have been handed another blow after state authorities in the US sought to press five insurance companies to reduce their exposure to the Miami-based firm. I mean, the bad press just keeps on coming for them, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's not a good look, is it? And this has been the problem, isn't it, for a number of months. 777 before they even got involved with Everton. You know, it is negative headlines all the time. I think this one corresponds to protecting the rights, is it, of widows or orphans, things like that. I have to read Dave's piece for the full exposure on that one. But yeah, it's not a good look, and it's been something that we've been talking about for a long time now. I mean, 777 have had their opportunity to sort of put their case forward and try and present themselves in a better light. I mean, they've always said that they can't speak on this because of the regulations that they're having to go through here and the scrutiny that they're coming under. But surely they wouldn't necessarily jeopardise the whole process if they could come forward and say, look, this is what we want to do at Everton, or this is, you know, on a positive outlook, why we can make things better. I don't know why that's been a problem for them. They've obviously felt that's the case. But yeah, that's the concern, isn't it, for Evertonians, not just if they've got enough money, where this money's going to come from, or just what kind of a company they are, because although they own a number of clubs around the world, it just seems to be one bad news story after another with them. I mean, I understand I've been speaking to sources close to 777, I think it was just before we went down to Bournemouth last weekend, and they remain confident that they will get the deal over the line, and they think it's going to come down one way or the other by the end of this month. But yeah, it's an eighth month now, and you can see maybe why the Premier League are being so tough with their scrutiny of them, because there are so many questions like this that need answering.
Dan, I think we were just talking before we came on air, was the last time you came on the pod, was it pre-Spurs, just after Burnley?
Yeah, so just before Christmas, yeah.
So we haven't won a game since you were last on
no
the pod.
No league game since I was last.
Maybe that's the reason we need to keep Dan on.
Well, maybe it's like we've won 180 now, Dan's back on the pod.
Yeah, hopefully. Because, yeah, it was after we talked a bit about the League Cup loss to Fulham on penalties, which really feels a bit like a sliding doors moment now for the whole season. Mm. And then, yeah, it was the preview of Tottenham where we lost 2-1 at White Hart Lane.
Yeah.
Well, at the new stadium. And, yeah, in which we were playing quite well at that point, just didn't get the results over Christmas. So, yeah, Burnley tomorrow is just massive, isn't it? I mean, I thought against Newcastle we were quite poor, but came away with the first objectively positive result for a while, so we've just now got to go and win. I think that the pressure's on.
But let's just go back to 777 for a sec. We expected this deal to be over the line by there's no point the last time you were on the pod, yet here we are 3 months later, and it's still not over the line. The longer this goes on, is not good for the club, is it?
No, like, you know, all of these headlines, they don't fill you with confidence about them if the takeover is to go through. But also, nor does the state of limbo that Everton fans have been left in for so long. You know, it feels like nothing is set in stone about the club at the moment. We don't know what division we're going to be in next year. We don't know who's going to own the club. It's all just, all the uncertainty and all the worry just contributes to that feeling of anxiety amongst the fans, I think. And you just want to know what's happening either way with this takeover. And, yeah, as Chris says, these headlines don't make you think like it's going to be wonderful, but you can't just wait and see. You know, something has to happen soon.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Chris, the last kind of update we got on 777 was that the Premier League had given conditional approval over them. So, albeit apparently it's with a number of strict, you know, caveats that they've got to go through if they take over the club. But does that mean the ball's back in 777's court then, and are we just kind of waiting on them? Surely that must be the case.
I don't know whether up to in terms of if they had gone back then to the Premier League, say, yeah, well, this is our interpretation of meeting those caveats, and then I guess the panel then has to look at them. So I couldn't honestly tell you whether it's in their court or whether now the Premier League are now looking at because 777 have been adamant they've always answered all the questions that have been asked of them, but then the questions keep coming because maybe the answers haven't been satisfactory enough. I mean, one thing that you can say about 777 is that they've kept the club afloat this season in terms of the payments that they've made already, even before they've actually had their deal approved. I mean, what was it $180 million or something like that has been used on the monthly costs there. They've put their money where their mouth is in that respect, because I think one of the concerns is if they've got the cash flow and issues of that ilk. But they've put that money in whether they get the approval or not. So we've talked about the fan advisory board and trying to flush out any other potential investors, but they could have come forward and when they had the chance to do that, and they haven't done that. I mean, whatever we think about 777, and unfortunately, a lot of these headlines are negative and do fill you with a lot of concerns. You know that they have been making sure that Everton stay afloat this season, because that's the great dilemma for a lot of fans, isn't it? Is that a lot of people aren't welcoming 777 with open arms or thinking that they're any sort of great people or great group for the club. But what's the alternative? And the alternative really is the unknown, isn't it? Because you know, they don't want to say the A word, but in terms of can the club stay afloat? And obviously Joe's done that piece about the annual figures coming through there, and there's a lot of concerns, you know, especially, you know, if Everton were, you know, to drop out of the Premier League, then it you know, there's a huge question mark there. So yeah, 777, I mean, they have been committed to the cause, but like Dan says, you know, it's not going to continue indefinitely. So, you know, they either get the decision or they want, also at some point they're going to have to walk away.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Okay, well, we'll leave 777 there because I just felt like we needed to touch on it, just get it out the way. Yeah, because at this moment in time, we probably do have more pressing matters. Yeah. So, you know, Dan, Burnley next.
Yeah.
Touched about how nervous it could potentially be, but, you know, nerves obviously will play a part, but we need the players to just go out there and win. But, you know, no Premier League side has scored fewer goals from open play this season, which is, you know, a massive, massive concern. And although we got a positive result on Tuesday night, Calvert-Lewin scored. It was a penalty, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But, you know,
they
just
all
need
count.
To score. They all count, yeah.
It's an odd one, the Burnley game, I think, because they've been really poor the two times we played them this season. When they came to Goodison in the League Cup, they were, I know that wasn't their full-strength team, but I thought they were really poor. And then we beat them away, didn't we? That was the last league win.
Yeah.
When Michael Keane scored.
Yeah.
On paper, we should beat them, but these feel like the sort of home games where Everton have recently come unstuck. You know, I don't think it's going to be a classic in terms of for the neutral, but you just, Everton just have to find a way to win, have to find a way to score. You've got to hope Calvert-Lewin, with that drought over, is a bit more confident. I'd probably bring him back in from the start. I know it wasn't a great penalty, but, you know, he deserved a stroke of luck. And I don't know. I don't know what Dyche will do around his 11, but you've got to think there's enough in that team to beat Burnley. You've got to hope so.
Absolutely. Well, we'll come on to the starting 11 then. Obviously, you've already suggested that you'll play Calvert-Lewin, but Chris, as Dan's mentioned, Everton have already played Burnley twice this season with an aggregate score of 5. So this has got to be the ideal team for Everton to play, surely.
You've got to hope so, haven't you? I mean, the fear is on the flip side. You know, if they don't win this game, you're thinking, well, where is the win going to come from? But yeah, let's be positive. It was both of those games that Dan speaks about, their home and away against Burnley. Like I said, the much changed Burnley for the Carabao Cup tie, but that was an emphatic 3-0 victory. And then, it seems so different now because, like we said, they haven't won since that trip to Turf Moor. But they won that one, just such as a canter. It was almost like too easy, really. And that, like you said, now we're like, oh, where's the next win going to come from? But yeah, Sean Dyche's return to Turf Moor, you know, the ground where he was in charge for 9.5 years there. And it was emphatic. Everton didn't really have to move out of second gear. They got their noses in front, just kept Burnley at arm's length. And it just looked to be an absolute gulf between the two sides. And then it's almost like, because I think there's a lot of, whatever we think about Sean Dyche and his style has come under great scrutiny because of the poor results of late. There was almost a snobbery against Sean Dyche when Burnley went up under Vincent Kompany. It's all this lovely champagne football now, you know, Manchester City light for the Clarets, and not like Dinosaur Dyche. You've moved on from that and, you know, won the championship at a canter. Well, they've almost, you know, in the Premier League, it's just not worked for them. They've been like a soft touch, and that's where Everton, hopefully, you've got to think that they can like steamroller them again. I don't know, maybe, you know, it'd be great if it was as an emphatic as it was those previous times. But yeah, it's almost like he's not learned from that. You know, he's not got the players to play that way in the Premier League. You know, he can get a record point haul or score all these goals in the Championship, but in the Premier League is much tougher. And I think that Vincent Kompany's had a bit of a steep learning curve this year. I mean, maybe they've gone, well, okay, we came up earlier than what we would have thought of, and we'll take the relegation and just have a yo-yo for a couple of years and stabilise that. A club of Burnley's size and stature can do that, unlike Everton. But yeah, from the two games we played this season, Everton given them a lesson a couple of times there, so you've just got to hope that they can do it again and complete the hat-trick, as it were.
Yeah, I remember, Dan, like poor Burnley were in the cup game at home. As Chris said there, they were trying to play out from the back and, you know, play football maybe in what people would describe as the right way, but it literally just didn't work for them. We took full advantage of that. Obviously, you know, fast forward a couple of months later, completely different time. The one thing that you know, I feel like we just need to get over right now is this Goodison Park hoodoo. Form's not great across the board. We know that we haven't won in, you know, how many months, but the games coming up now, the ones that where you see us picking up the points are at Goodison Park.
Yeah.
And if we can't beat Burnley, how are we gonna beat the likes of Nottingham Forest, Liverpool, Brentford, Sheffield United?
Yeah.
Probably the first three more, because, you know, they're the ones where they're tougher than Burnley, basically.
Yeah.
We just need to get rid of this whole Goodison Park hoodoo.
Yeah, and we've got to pick up the points sooner rather than later, because I can't do another year of the maze that we've had the last 2 years. You know, like, I can't, I'm not sure I'll be able to cope if it goes down to the last day of the season. So you've got to pick these points up now, and we've wasted too many of these opportunities on this barren run. And yes, Everton, as Chris says, we've beaten Burnley easily twice this season, but it's a very different club at the moment than we were in December, when it was, you know, there was that defiance on the deduction that probably came a bit later. But, you know, I think everything Everton was doing on the pitch was working.
Yeah.
And it just isn't now. And I don't know. Yeah, you can probably take some heart from the way that we stayed in the game at Newcastle. But as you point out, it's Goodison, isn't it, at the minute, that we can't find a way. Dyche can't really find a way to make it work to his advantage, which even in tough patches, previous managers to him have done. You know, I remember in the run-in under Lampard, he had those huge wins at Goodison, and that was the start of this sort of pre-match atmosphere building. I remember when we beat Chelsea, beat Newcastle on St Patrick's Day, beat Manchester United, all in that run-in at home under Lampard. So those were huge games where Goodison really came alive. And yeah, Dyche has to find a way to make the home ground work for him, really. And hopefully the start of this atmosphere building helps that. But you just wonder whether his style, whatever, doesn't quite bring the ground to its feet. I don't know. But yeah, if we play like we did in the League Cup against Burnley, that could be the start of it really clicking. And it has to.
What is the problem about Goodison Park then, Chris? Because we know how much of a fortress it's been, you know, in previous years. Dan maybe touched upon it there. I mean, the way Dyche sets up and style of play. But, you know, Goodison with the fans there, like, the support, the players should relish that, shouldn't they?
Yeah, I think it's been Deitch's Achilles heel. I mean, I'm often, you know, I stick up for him a lot on the podcast, and say, you know, I say who would have done a better job in the circumstances. But I think it is the big chink in his armour so far, in terms of it's a big thing for him to exploit and for Everton to get the best of. Like you said, even on bad times, even when Everton are struggling, opposition haven't wanted to come to Goodison Park. Alex Ferguson, the most successful manager in British football history, he said it's always a nightmare going to Goodison Park. You know, the crowds on top of you, it's intimate. You know, it's that whole Goodison bear pit that we all want to be seeing. And maybe it's the style of play. And I think Michael Ball, I speak to Michael a lot of the time when we're doing his column, and he's alluded to it quite a lot in that. He thinks it could be down to the playing style. You know, Everton need to be on the front foot from the start. You know, get the crowd. It's all that chicken and egg, isn't it? About, you know, the crowd spur the team on, or the team spur the crowd on. But yeah, you've got to do something early on. Get at them. Don't let the opposition settle into their rhythm. Like time on the ball, when the home crowd's quiet or getting unsettled, then you've done half the job coming to Goodison, because they could turn and get more frustrated. But if you know Everton are up in their faces from the start, I mean, that just sets the tempo for the whole day. And this is a big thing for Deitch that he needs to do, not just tomorrow, but just going forward full stop. And, you know, if he does continue in the job next season, for Goodison's last season as well, because it's a big weapon in Everton's armoury, and it's part of the reason, obviously, with the stadium move there, that they want to try and replicate that as much as they can within a modern setting, with the steep, intimate nature of the new stadium, recreating Goodison, but without the pillars, and obviously having all the mod cons and stuff like that. But yeah, I think it's the biggest thing for Deitch. And also, I probably have a more rounded view, because I'm in the minority, because like all those fans who follow the club up and down the country, you get to see them home and away. But the majority of the fan base, of course, only gets to see them at Goodison. And it has really been poor. I mean, just to have won three Premier League games all season, we talk about that Carabao Cup game against Burnley, and that was emphatic. But in terms of league games, I mean, I actually missed the Bournemouth home game. So I've only had 1 week all season where I've seen Everton win Premier League games at Goodison. And that shows you like the ridiculousness of the situation. And it's something Deitch has got to be worthy of in terms of with his job, because he's got to keep that home faithful, satisfied. And in terms of just Everton's results in the short term, they really need to make Goodison work for them.
OK, we'll continue to submit your questions. We are live, as mentioned, on YouTube. I'll just read a couple out here. The Blues, a regular commenter: we sold all of our attacking quality that won us those home games in previous seasons. Is that obviously probably a valid reason why we're not scoring as many goals, if any?
It's a very fair point, isn't it? Like, you think of that running under Lampard, and I think Richarlison was so heavily responsible for that atmosphere. And when you're looking at players to stand up and get in the opposition faces and just be a nightmare, but also score big goals, he was the perfect player to have in that running. And Dom's been out of form this year. He's not scoring goals. But, you know, we are so sort of slim on attacking options, and especially ones who are real nightmares like Richarlison. Yeah, so very fair point.
So I was just going to say as well, even somebody like Alex Iwobi, for such a long time, so frustrating. He's one of the most frustrating players I've ever seen at Everton, because, you know, you could play. But even, you know, like the game Dan mentioned there, the Newcastle one, the late winner there, just that bit of inspiration from somebody. But yeah, like you said, like the contributor says, so many sort of games. Anthony Gordon, another one, Manchester United. So yeah, so many sort of potential match winners like that who aren't there, or the ones you have got still. Dominic Calvert-Lewin, even Abdoulaye Doucouré, been out of form and haven't been able to get the goals of late.
Okay, James Evans: the home form has been atrocious for 3 years now, and Blue Nose, Goodison is no longer a bear pit, it's a McDonald's ball pit. I mean, wow. A nice description there. I mean, Chris, as Dan mentioned there previously, we've just talked about it there previously, as we've had players who've managed to get the goals, but you know, finally, Dominic Calvert-Lewin got his goal. Okay, it was from a penalty, but it doesn't matter. It went in. Gav Buchland's predicted a bit of a goal-scoring run now for Dominic Calvert-Lewin, because he believes his goals come in small streaks.
Yeah,
I think he described it kind of like that, which, you know, probably looking back now in his career, that probably is right.
Yeah, so I just hope so. Yeah, that's been the case, isn't it? He's streaky, like you say. He's hopefully can get a purple patch now. I mean, he seems ridiculous thinking back to, obviously, I was down at their London stadium with Conor O'Neill. Joe was off that day just before Halloween and when Dom had scored his last goal. He'd become only the fourth Everton player to reach 50 Premier League goals after Romelu Lukaku, Duncan Ferguson and Tim Cahill. So it shows you just what pedigree he has got, and you know the fact that over the 32 years of the Premier League now only four Everton players have done that for the club, so he's an esteemed company in that respect. So you know he can do it, but like you say, when he does find the net, it tends to be in streaks in purple patches. So we've got to hope that this is the start of something. Now, I mean, he was unfortunate in terms of the goals, both home and away against Tottenham, being ruled out. One for a very soft Andre Gomez challenge on Emerson Royal, and then obviously Jack Harrison being credited with the one in the home game. So it was a bit of an anomaly that he had gone so long without scoring, but it can only play on your mind if you're a centre forward, if that's your job. So yeah, let's hope that he's got his eye in that, you know, that he's able to get a few in these what we've talked about hopefully winnable games over this month.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Did you catch Dyche's press conference yesterday?
No, I didn't. Okay. I didn't.
Well, I've got a quote here from it and I just wanted to know your thoughts. So, Dyche, we want to have a baseline where we can judge, and that can't be just winning or losing. It's about level of performance. I don't think we've been as far away as everyone have made us out to be. What did you make of that?
I don't agree with him. I think we've been really poor. At times, it's been results not quite going our way, but I think you just have to look at the first half of that Newcastle game. We were really poor. I thought nothing was working, and for once, maybe a bit harsh for once, but Dyche actually changed the game with his substitutions, and it felt like he'd been really proactive and moved things in the right direction. Whereas over this winless run, you look at games and how poorly we've managed them. You know how many late goals we've conceded, how many points we've thrown away. I suppose he has a point in that we've been in positions to collect points and we have thrown them away, but I don't think you could say the performances have been anywhere near good enough. You don't go on a run like that unless you're playing badly. I think it's as simple as that.
Yeah.
And yeah, just gotta change it round. So
I think, Chris, I can't remember who it was, but someone said it in the week in the office that you can put up with Dyche's performances, or I think he described it as Dyche ball, as long as we're picking up points and winning. Yeah. But we're not doing that, are we? So to suggest it's not just about winning or losing, it's a bit crazy, that, isn't it?
That sounds like somebody who's gone on a record-breaking run without a win. I know what he means in that. I'd say what has probably gone on in this run, like we've talked about, so Dan said already, they probably started off, they were unfortunate. Obviously, that game at Tottenham where they played really well and they lost, and then the longer it got on, the result, the levels of performance have tailed off. I mean, I see what he's probably talking about is that you need to be producing a certain amount, and obviously games can go either way in the Premier League, but there is a difference in that they're not in, like I've said this before, they don't feel like they're in free fall like they were under Lampard or Benitez, but either way, Dyche has gone longer than either of those managers without a Premier League win. That's a fact now. He's now overhauled Mike Walker's unwanted record from 1994. And it doesn't say in the record books, an unlucky to asterisk or something like that. I played well. But until they get that W on the board, as it were, then he's going to be, the pressure's going to go up and up. And it's like I said, let's not speak about not winning this one. That's why we've built it as a must win, because he flips it around. Another one that he says is that they're all must wins, but by saying that, you kind of just sort of playing down that particular phrase. But I know if ever there was a must win. It has to be this one. But yeah, in terms of those comments, I can understand where he comes from in terms of the level of performance. But as Dan said, that the level hasn't always been there, especially in recent matches.
Tyne, Ashley Young, we've done a piece this past couple of days on Ashley Young, bit of a rallying cry.
Yeah.
I'll read the line from it. It says, Ashley Young has insisted everyone in the Everton squad is well aware of what is required between now and the end of the season as they look to end their record-breaking winless run. Are you a big fan of rallying cries, or would you just prefer the players to just do the talking on the pitch?
That's a good question, actually, because you hear a lot of it, don't you, from Everton players. And as much as I like him, Seamus Coleman's very good at it. You've heard a lot from Seamus over the time he's been at Everton about how they're going to put things right. And I think, actually, yeah, you're better off head down, do the work on the pitch, because quite often, I don't know if it's just you're suspicious about these things, but it feels like you're setting yourself up to fail when you say stuff like that. You know, just keep your head down, don't talk about it, do your talking on the pitch, because the fans don't need a rallying cry. The fans have been what have dragged Everton over the line the last couple of years. We all as supporters are very well aware of what's gone on. We'd like to think the players are, and that's the baseline. The baseline is they know how important this is and how important it is for the club to stay in the league. So just show us that by playing well, winning football matches. We'll get you over the line if we see that back from you, I think, is the deal. So, we don't need reminding that in words. We need to see it.
Do you think he had a good game on Tuesday? I mean, obviously, won the penalty, bit of a decisive moment in the game.
Yeah, I don't think he was wonderful. I think he got better as the game went on, actually, but... And I was very nervous about that right-hand side of him and Godfrey. It doesn't feel quite Premier League standard, that. But, yeah, he won the penalty, and I was impressed that he just pestered the referee for the penalty, which felt very Manchester United. It's the sort of thing that's how you get decisions. If you feel you've been hard done by, go and yell at the ref and demand for it to go to VAR or whatever, you know, demand for it to be looked at, because you can't just sit there and feel sorry for yourself. You've got to do everything you can to try and get the points. Yeah. So I was impressed with that. And I think, yeah, he grew into the game. Don't think he played well to begin with, but yeah, he did all right in the end.
This is a good point, because we mentioned that in the pod on Wednesday. You know, I, watching the game, I don't think I even realised that incident even happened.
Yeah.
And then obviously, you know, probably 20, 30 seconds later, you see the replay and you go, oh my God, that's a penalty. And then they replay it again, but it's Ashley Young running after the referee. You know, that's exactly what we need more of, isn't it? Yeah. And we obviously mentioned that in Wednesday's pod. But another rallying cry, Chris, has come from, you know, the Everton fans this past week. You know, we know how good the Everton fans are at rallying and getting behind the players and the whole team when things get tough. And I've got a line from a piece from our website, so if I just read it here. Mm-hmm. Preparations have been underway for days after a rallying cry was issued by the influential 1878 fan group for flags, banners and other ideas to turn Goodison Park into a cauldron on Saturday, as the Blues once again fight to provide a boost for their team at a moment of high stakes. You know, it shouldn't just be that left down to the Everton fans once again to do this, but once again, you know, the Everton fans are up and running, and you know, I fully suspect Goodison Park to be an absolute bear pit on Saturday.
Not the McDonald's ball pit.
Yeah.
It's sad that he's having to be... I mean, it should just happen naturally, shouldn't it? But given that the club in such dire straits over recent years, you know, the worst two equivalent points totals in the club's entire history, been followed by this season of unprecedented strife in terms of the points deduction, and now on the pitch, longest ever Premier League winless run. So yeah, it is back in the fans' hands again, and obviously great work from the 1878. They were behind all the Premier League protest cards as well, and all the fundraising efforts that and the distribution of the cards. You know, they were a big fixture for a long time, and the matches, that was actually one I remember. Burnley away, where Burnley bizarrely brought in some sort of regulation where no A4 cards were going to be allowed into Turf Moor, but okay. Then somehow they managed to get in there en masse, and that was all the 1878s again. So yes, it shouldn't have to come to this, but it has come to this again. And yeah, anything that helps improve the atmosphere, let those players sort of sink in what it really means to them. I tell you what would actually go down well. I think I've said this already on Twitter. Sean Dyche should play them that Derek Mountfield interview when he was in this room and what he said about some of Goodison's greatest nights, because that didn't motivate you to sort of run through the proverbial brick wall for the Blues. I don't know what would, but yeah, the fans are out there in force again. They're going to try and make it a special atmosphere. Let's hope that makes a difference, because I think that was the big concern for me last season. I remember the Newcastle United game, not the one the year before that we mentioned, the 1-0, but the 4-1 last season. Yeah. I was there against Wimbledon and Coventry on the last day, and this was like match anything like that. And after the fireworks on top of that, but it still wasn't enough. So ultimately, let's hope that can play a big part in it. But at the end of the day, it's the players themselves it's only them who can make the difference ultimately.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you haven't watched or listened to Chris's interview with Derek Mountfield, you can listen to that on our Royal Blue podcast channel, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and you can also watch it on the Royal Blue YouTube channel. Really good listen, really good watch, Chris.
Yeah, he was really good. Form, yeah.
Absolutely. Just for those watching live on YouTube, I don't know if you noticed, but we've got no blinds in this room and the sun is shining really powerful on me, and I'm lit up, overexposed, but there's nothing we can do. We have put a request in to get blinds in this room, but we will carry on. Let's move on to a bit of news and injury updates. Anana is a doubt for the game, but I want to ask you, Dan, about Anana and just your thoughts, because I've had a few frank exchanges with fans good-natured exchanges, obviously, on Twitter this week about Anana and his worth and whether he's good enough, but where does he fit into this Everton? This current Everton team. What are your thoughts on Anana?
Sorry, I was just going to say, is Anana a doubt with a bruised ego? Is that what it is?
Okay. I quite like him. I spoke about that Fulham penalty shootout earlier and how devastating that was. It was tough to like him after that, but I do like him as a footballer. I think he wants to get on the ball. He wants to influence the game. I think there was a moment against Newcastle where he has it sort of edge of the box, flips it through to Decore, and Decore has that chance, and it wasn't anything spectacular, but it was a nice ball and he played quite well. And I like him. I think he does add something to our midfield that it otherwise wouldn't have, but I still want to see more from him. You want to see more goals and assists, I think. And I think you want a sort of midfield that can get the best out of him, I think. And I'm not sure we've worked out how to do that yet. So I would play him if he was fit. But if he's a doubt, you might be careful, knowing that the games that we've got coming up. But yeah, on the whole, I like him as a footballer. I think he's got to show a bit more, but I think there's something there that I really like. Yeah.
Okay, well, Chris, we had quite a debate, didn't we, on Wednesday about Anana. Again, you can watch that back on the Royal Blue YouTube channel. But is there a little bit of a concern over his attitude, or am I just being really harsh?
I don't know if it's just a concern as that. Just people want him to sort of go about things in a slightly different way. A lot of people have picked up to me. Seems like Dan says, we all say the same thing. I think this criticism comes because we know he's so gifted. We wouldn't be saying this if Dennis Strakulers, he was a cult hero of the Gladys Street. We knew he was very short on ability, but he would always give his all. He'd always run for the ball and chase lost causes and never give up much. And Arna seems to be coasting at times. He seems to be playing within himself. Again, we've discussed, was that down to Dyche's tactics, bypassing midfield, not getting the best out of him? But a lot of people have commented on the fact that he's like a cheerleader, isn't he? He's always waving his arms in the air and trying to egg the crowd. And I mean, it's great that he feeds off the crowd's energy. But again, we're going about that chicken and egg. You show something to show the fans what you're all about. Give them something to stand on their feet about. Don't just rely on you having to sort of wave your arms to get them up off the feet. Get them off the feet by a piece of play, by a bit of football, because he's more than capable of doing it. And again, I know he's got better players alongside him for the Belgium national team, but yeah, just hope that he could have transferred some of that form. What I will say about Anana and Burnley, I'm trying to think now, I think hasn't he scored in both of Everton's games against Burnley this season? He scored the header from the corner kick at Turf Moor, and I think there was another close range effort in the Carabao Cup game. And given that's another thing about his game, we'd like to see him scoring more goals. maybe you need him against Burnley there because he's got his eye in against them. If you know he could get free and free against them, that'd be great. So maybe they're his lucky team. That's who he wants to be playing every week. But yeah, I can totally understand these frustrations. It's just because he's so gifted, and you think the time that he is at Everton, you know, if he does move on, you just hope that you felt well. He gave everything while he was there, because as we've always said, the big fear is that he moves on and blossoms into a world-class player with somebody else, and you're thinking, well, why didn't you quite do that for Everton?
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Comment here, which I think is probably aimed at me, so from the Blues YouTube channel. These fans who expect Onana to dominate matches on his own are delusional. Should he be dominating matches for us, or is he, you know, is he just where he is in his career at Everton?
That's quite a good question, actually. I think you do need someone to stand up and be counted in that Everton team, I think. You know, in the way that in the run-in last year, you think of the huge moments Decore contributed. I don't know if you could call that dominating matches, but you're making the difference, aren't you, that gets the points on the board. And that's really, I think, what people want. Whether or not Onana is that sort of midfielder, I don't think we know yet, because, you know, he is still a young player, but he's good out of possession. And I think because he is good on the ball, you do then want to see more end product out of that. So I think, yeah, it's fair to expect a big money signing like him to be getting you over the line. Yeah.
I mean, there's another comment here, and we'll move on from Onana now, but basically saying Onana has never been a goal scorer or an assister. I mean, okay, so are we effectively just saying he's a holding defensive midfielder who just puts out fires, who stops the defence? I, to be honest, I thought he'd be a lot more than that.
I think he's capable of being more than that, yeah. I think you could see him as a box-to-box player who should be as comfortable defending his own as he is outside the opposition box. But, you know, I know not many of those midfielders exist anymore, but, yeah, I think he has the ability to be that. So you do want him to be that for Everton.
Okay, interesting comment here from Once Was Donker. It's not a must-win, stop exaggerating.
Well,
I do think it's a must-win.
Take a point tomorrow, will
take
we?
A point, yeah. Okay, well, Chris, we'll just come to injuries on you on this then. So, just on Onana, Dice said he was a doubt and he's going to face a late fitness test.
Yeah, well, I suppose though that there are options there, aren't they? Because James Garner missed out, but as I've said already, the fact that Onana's done well against Burnley twice this season, for somebody like we say who isn't prolific, you know, a couple of is it three goals a season? A couple of them come against Burnley. So, yeah, I mean, hopefully he can be involved, but, you know, there are other options there. It's not like they're down to the bare bones. And obviously, when Vitali Mykolenko was injured at Bournemouth on Saturday, he was out with illness, wasn't he? That, you know, Ben Godfrey had to fill in there again. They do have other options, but given that he has done well in a couple of games against Burnley this season, hopefully, you know, he will be around, and hopefully he might have, if he is available to play, he might have a point to prove. If he was a bit upset about going out and getting the hook on the hour mark at St James's Park, hopefully you can see a fired up Onana wanting to sort of show everyone what he's capable of doing.
And just two other players then who injury doubts. Seamus Coleman is available, Dice said, after being given a breather at Newcastle, although he was on the bench.
Yes, he
came
was,
on,
yeah.
Didn't he?
Yeah,
came on like, crucial just for stoppage time. I thought he did well, yeah.
And so Coleman's obviously available and fit if needed, which, you know, hopefully he will be. And Dan Juma, again, who's been injured the past couple of weeks. But Dice said he's not quite fit yet, but he's progressing well, so not expecting him to see him.
No, I think with Seamus Coleman, it was just a case of he played the full 180 minutes for Ireland, two games, and then the 90 minutes for Everton. So, you know, at 35 years of age, he played, you know, three full matches in the space of 10 days there. So I think that's why he ultimately went back down to the bench against Newcastle. In terms of Dan Juma, yeah, I wouldn't expect the way that, you know, that Dyche doesn't tend to sort of throw people in at the deep end like that, and, you know, the old fitness Dyche fit sort of phraseology. He's not played as he went off right at the end of the Fulham game at the end of Jan. So, I'd imagine he'd be eased back in. I mean, who knows? Maybe be on the bench, but I think that's the best you could imagine from him. Because, I mean, to be honest, he wasn't playing that much anyway, was he, when he was fit? Other than when he suddenly came in January, perhaps to placate him a bit, I don't know. But, yeah, he's been struggling for minutes all season. So I can't imagine he'd be thrown back in at the deep end.
Okay, well, just before we come on to team selection and predictions, Dan, we haven't mentioned, oh, well, it's been 42 minutes and we haven't mentioned the words points deduction yet in an Everton podcast, which is unprecedented, to be honest. But we are going to mention it now. So I've got a little piece from, a line from an Echo piece. The headline is Premier League considering major points deduction change after Everton saga. So I think this story originally came from the Mail.
Yeah.
So the line is, the Premier League are reportedly considering abandoning point deduction as a method for punishment from next season and could instead implement a, quote, luxury tax for sides that fall foul of financial rules. I mean, we don't know if this is definitely true for a start, but obviously it's been reported in the Mail. But if true, you know, what are your thoughts on this new rule change?
If true, it's just yet more shambles, isn't it, really? I mean, the idea that you could have two teams potentially relegated this season as a direct result of points deductions, and then you decide next year, well, we're not doing that. I don't... It's just not fair, is it? You just can't get your head around how you could think, well, we're going to scrap that system. Because they think it's right now. Surely they think, well, it should be right for longer than a year. But then... the idea of a luxury tax as well. How is a team that's overspent, where are they finding the money for a luxury tax? Where are Everton currently meant to find the money for a luxury tax? Because we've broken the profit and sustainability rules. So, yeah, the whole thing, it just feels like rules are being made up as it goes along, constantly, which I think is a huge, direct reason for why Everton fans are so frustrated, that these rules are changing and being rethought out and... they're not consistent, and yeah, if it's scrapped and we go down, you would just be furious if next year teams were just slapped with a X many thousand pound fine for breaking the rules when actually it's cost us our Premier League status. So yeah, it's just a joke.
Chris, I mean, surely if this was to be the case and, like, say Forest or Everton did go down because of a points deduction and they were to change it, there's got to be some sort of legal ramifications with... I don't want to go into too much in that, but you would have to think that Everton would have to try and fight the case. I don't even know what the outcome would be if they did anyway.
Yeah, we've already talked about the sham that is the potential of relegation issues being resolved after the final ball of the season's been kicked. I mean, that's disgusting enough as it is. Whatever, you know, whether you're Everton, Forest, anyone else in the mix there, or just a general football fan, that's not satisfactory at all. But this, yeah. So, Everton get done once in a season, get a second charge, so potentially twice in a season, potential of having a double points deduction, and then get rid of it. Or Forest with their bigger breach but smaller deduction, and then they've gone to appeal, and then get rid of it, and then just in time for when they might catch up with Manchester City and their 115 charges. And, no more points deductions. Instead, pay a luxury tax. We don't want teams spending beyond their means and spending too much money. But if they do spend too much money, we'll ask them to give away some more money. I mean, pay the luxury tax. I mean, it just doesn't make sense, does it? I know, obviously, they've said all along that they're abandoning the current system at the end of this season, but this... I mean, I've not read this particular piece, but just absolute nonsense. And like you say, it's almost like just to punish Everton and then we'll move on. That's how you could feel, couldn't you? Because it's just Everton have been done for two. Well, they've been obviously the first charge. They're waiting on whatever happens with the second one. But they faced two charges from two separate time periods this season, and like crowbarred them in now, and then to get rid of it. Wow. It just seems absolutely ludicrous, and like I said, totally unfair. No matter who you support, you can't just be saying that. And like, yeah, what's the incentive? Because I mean, City could potentially, you know, obviously the 115 charges, they might be found innocent of all 115 charges, but there's a potential to buy your way out of trouble then there if you have got the means. It's just which they would have the capacity to do, to pay whatever luxury taxes is asked of them. I mean, yeah, it sounds absolutely outrageous, doesn't it?
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Is this a clear case then of the Premier League not being able to regulate themselves with these punishments, like police themselves with what they've got to do when teams break?
Yeah, I think that's been the concern all along, isn't it? That Everton have sort of been caught in the middle of a power play here, where the Premier League are desperate to show that they can keep their own house in order. Obviously, they will say it's an independent commission, of course, but it's chosen from the people on their list. But yeah, they don't want this independent regulation, and they're doing everything they can to show that they can police their own competition. But then, yeah, it just doesn't make sense. You've got the independent commission, the first one for Everton, came up with their verdict, and then Everton's appeal commission saying that the first one made legal errors, and then the Forest lot are saying that they don't know where the Everton appeal ones got their numbers from. Yeah, it just doesn't make sense. It just doesn't stack up, does it? And that's the problem, because you don't know what you're going to get. I mean, is it a case you roll the dice, see what Everton get next time? Or, I mean, they've also got the whole double jeopardy. We'll see how that plays out. But yeah, it's just an absolute farce, isn't it? And the thing that is arbitrary rulings that nobody understands, including even those who were actually working on them, who some of the, to be fair, whatever you think of them, they are great legal minds. These are people who've got like double firsts from Oxford and Cambridge, and like storied highly reputable legal careers behind them, and they can't make head and the tail of it. So yeah, it's just absolute nonsense.
Okay, well, we've been going for 48 minutes, and it's probably a good time to finish off with team selections and predictions. So, Dan, we'll come to you, and we'll see if we can all agree on team selection. Sure. Obviously, start with the keeper, which I'm sure is no doubt on that one, and then we'll go through.
Yeah, obviously Pickford plays, then your back four, Mikhailenko, Tarkowski, Branthwaite, Coleman potentially. I'm not Godfrey's biggest fan, and Deitch clearly isn't Patterson's biggest fan. So Coleman back in, your big game, bring your club captain, help with that atmosphere building, I think. Yeah, and then midfield, if Onana's a doubt, you probably don't play him, but the fixtures that are coming.
Yeah.
Garner, Doucouré, Idrissa Gueye. And then Calvert-Lewin comes back in up front, McNeil and Young or Harrison, probably Harrison, back in for me.
Chris, do you agree?
Yeah, I go positive. Like you said, I'd go for so the crucial ones. Yeah, Seamus Coleman back in, right back for me. Hopefully Inanna's fit to retain his place in the middle. I'd be tempted possibly to bring James Garner back in for Idrissa Gueye, just go as positive as possible in terms of attack-minded players, and that means, as well as Ashley Young did do, get Harrison back in on the right wing and Calvert-Lewin centre-forward. That's how I go.
I mean, in a way, it's good that this is probably the first time in a while that we're questioning the team selection in a good way, in that. There's options. If you look at the team that finished on Tuesday, Andre Gomez, now, as long as he stays fit until tomorrow, he's played himself into contention.
Yeah, we haven't mentioned him, have we? So,
for that game, and I thought he was really good on Tuesday. That cameo that he had. So, there is options at least, and even if it's not working, at least there might be one or two options.
Yeah,
off the bench, I would say, if Onana is fit, and made a big thing about Onana this past week, I would still play him. I would still start him. I think the point that you made, that he has scored against Burnley.
Yeah.
These things come in threes.
Yeah.
So you don't know, do you?
Yeah, if he's fit, he's right in that midfield.
Yeah.
Probably over Idrissa Gueye, I think.
And I would say Calvert-Lewin has got a start.
Has to
play. I think if he swaps, or he continues with Beto up front, because obviously Beto started, didn't he?
Yeah.
I think he's made a monumental mistake. I think if Calvert-Lewin has scored, the confidence will be there. So we'll see. I think I would go along with that. Predictions then. I'm going to go for mine first, because I have said all along for about a month now, before the 3-week break that we had, that Burnley would be our first win. So I thought we'd get beat against Bournemouth. I thought we'd get beat against Newcastle. Obviously, we got the 1 point from the two. I'm going to go 2-0 to Everton against Burnley. Going to go positive, and that's the first time I've gone positive in a long time on a pod. So what are you going?
I'll go 2-1, late winner.
Okay.
Just to really lift
to,
us.
To Everton, Dan.
To Everton, yeah. 2-1, late winner. And hopefully that sets us on the right path.
Okay, Chris, are you going to go the same?
Yeah, I'm going to go. I'm going to say an Everton win, and I'm going to, maybe, I don't know, it's more out of hope than judgment. I'm going to match what you said, 2-0, another clean sheet against the Clarets for the Blues. So, yeah, 2-0.
Okay, well, I know there's been one or two comments saying that it's not a must win. It's obviously not a must win in the sense that if we don't win it, we're not going to go down or anything, but no. It's a must win in the sense that we're playing harder teams coming up. This is where we've got to pick up the points right now because it's only going to get tougher at the end of the day.
Yeah. I mean, in the same way that Calvert-Lewin had to break his goal drought, we've got to end this winless run. And there's no better chance than that, than Burnley at home.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's really a good place to finish, unless we've got anything else to talk about, lads.
No, I think that's just keep it on the positive.
Okay, well, fantastic stuff. That's all from today's show. Again, please remember to hit the like and subscribe button on YouTube. Follow us on the Royal Blue YouTube channel. Follow us on Facebook, which is Everton FC Liverpool Echo. And also follow us on TikTok, which is Royal Blue Everton. I've been Ian Crowell, joined by Chris Beasley and Dan Haygarf, and this has been the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.